Elsa Shallet Reviews. Again from Hollywood, we present Elsa Shallet, noted previewer of motion pictures and interviewer of the stars. Tonight, her guests are Miss Tallulah Bankhead and Mr. John Emery, celebrated names in the theater, both in this country and London. At present, Miss Bankhead and Mr. Emery are rehearsing for the presentation of their new play entitled I Am Different, which will be given a premiere performance in Los Angeles and taken to New York for the opening of the fall season. Now, here is Elsa Shallet, who will first tell you of the outstanding pictures of the week. Mrs. Shallet.
Thank you very much. Good evening, friends. The pictures that I should like to name for your consideration are The Texans, The Crowd Roars, and Mother Carey's Chickens. In dramatic content, there's a wide variance between the subject of The Texans, which is something of an heroic and episodic quality, and Mother Carey's Chickens, which is as sentimental and homespun as rose leaves in a Dresden jar. And in between these two quantities falls The Crowd Roars, a vigorous drama about prize fighters. Robert Taylor plays a boxing ring champ. In itself, this is singular. The Texans is outdoor drama done on a very big scale, and it features Randolph Scott and Joan Bennett, and it helped him measurably along its dusty and pathfinding trail by the performances of Miss May Robeson and Walter Brennan and Raymond Hatton, to mention but a few of the large cast. The story is laid in the period immediately following the Civil War, and it concerns the driving of a vast herd of cattle from the Mexican boundary to the Kansas border. The picture is movement and vigor, and it excels in camera values because of the sweep of its outdoor backgrounds of mountain and plain and river valley. Robert Taylor fits most effectively into the setting of the prize fight ring in The Crowd Roars, which is fast-moving melodrama. Considerable poetic justice, however, was taken in the unfoldment of the story, but if you're not too critical, this will soon be forgotten, especially when Mr. Taylor and Miss Marina Sullivan march to the altar. Frank Morgan plays Robert Taylor's father, and he's excellent in this sympathetic role. And a special ascent of applause goes to Mr. Edward Arnold for his portrayal of a big-time gambler. Now, just a few words about Mother Carey's Chickens with Miss Faye Bainter in the title part. This picture is merely the simple story of a mother and her children trying to establish a home after the death of the husband and father. It has warm appeal, and it delights with the splendid acting of Miss Faye Bainter and Mr. Ralph Morgan, and literally a flock of clever young players, Ruby Keeler, Ann Shirley, James Ellison, Jackie Moran, Virginia Wilder, a new youngster named Donnie Dunnigan. Too bad we can't mention all of them. And all of the character actresses and actors who play such an important part in determining the worth and the conviction of this picture. And now, friends, I'm pleased indeed to be privileged to introduce our guests, Miss Tallulah Bankhead and Mr. John Emery. The names of Miss Bankhead and Mr. Emery stand for very fine achievement in the theater, both in England and this country, and for distinction on the screen, too, during those brief periods that motion pictures were fortunate enough to present them. But the stage thus far has been preeminent in the professional careers of Miss Bankhead and Mr. Emery, and at the moment, they are in rehearsal for a new play adapted by Zoe Akins entitled I Am Different. And if I may be permitted, I should like to add a personal word of appreciation in having Miss Bankhead and Mr. Emery in their first visit with us since their marriage a year ago. Their marriage, I should like to add, too, unites two distinguished families. Miss Bankhead is the daughter of the Honorable William B. Bankhead, Speaker of the House of Representatives, and Mr. Emery, as the son of Edward Emery and Georgia Waldron, is the sixth generation of actors in one of England's eminent theatrical families. Miss Bankhead and Mr. Emery, we're so happy to have you with us. And while my congratulations may be a trifle belated, please be assured that they carry the best wishes for you both.
Thank you, Mrs. Shallet. It's most kind of you. I should like to say, though, that I feel that I'm the very fortunate member of this family.
You see, Mrs. Shallet, that's one of the reasons I married him. He always says the right thing. But thank you for your good wishes, and we're delighted to be here with you this evening.
That's so nice of you, generous. And I must say, from all I've heard, your new play sounds most interesting.
Well, we're terribly excited over it. Zoe Akins, I think, has written an enchanting play. And we're giving it our whole thought and effort, and we can only hope that it will bring the pleasure to audiences and be the success that we honestly wish for.
Having a good play to begin with, and with such spirit and enthusiasm which you reflect, Miss Bankhead, one can almost become prophetic of the outcome.
Well, we feel we're very happy indeed in having such fine artists with us as Miss Richard Sheff, whom I've always adored.
Yes,
and then Glenn Anders, who's a divine actor, and also one of my oldest and dearest friends, has come out from New York to join us. And then, perhaps, as you know, the sets for the play are being done by Mr. Kai Nielsen, which we feel is an assurance of a very definitely beautiful production. And last but not least, the all-important factor in any play, My favorite director, Tommy Mitchell.
Well, you have a very imposing group of artists there, I must say. And it's wonderful to know such great talent being assembled for one production. Mr. Emery, this is going to be something of a departure for you, doing a modern play, isn't it?
Yes, it will be a departure, Mrs. Shallot. The period plays I've been doing for the past several seasons. Mm. Frankly, I relish the change.
Well, I rather can understand that, too. And, Miss Bankhead, I'd like to ask you this. You've had so much experience in London with British audiences. You must find them deeply loyal after the 8 years that you played with such brilliant success over there.
Well, I must say, Miss Shallot, the English public are extraordinarily loyal. I think anyone who's ever played in England becomes aware of the devotion that audiences have to one. And this goes on for years and years. I mean, they never seem to forget you, no matter how long you've been away. They always come to see you when you return. And no matter how bad the play might even be, they seem to have an almost protective attitude towards their old favorites.
Well, certainly, the American audience is loyal, too. The tradition of the theater may not be as old here, for one thing. And, well, for another, it's very difficult to bring the theater to the entire country because of its vast size. However, motion pictures can reach everyone, every little town and community. The unfailing devotion of the tremendous American audience to picture actors and actresses and personalities is surely strong proof of their loyalty.
I quite agree. And what we hope to do eventually, Mrs. Shallot, is to make a tour of the country with our new play, as you brought out a little while ago. If we could bring what we regard as good entertainment and good theater to most of the country, well, as Captain Cornell has done, as Helen Hayes has done, and the Lunch have done so brilliantly and successfully, we'd feel we were in a small way carrying on the tradition of the acting profession. And this is always meant to see actor and actresses actually lived in the trunk and moved from place to place.
Yes.
Bringing a little of the world of make-believe to people in a world almost overburdened with reality.
Well, let's hope that this fine ambition of yours, Miss Bankhead, and Mr. Emery will be fulfilled. And speaking of traveling, as Miss Bankhead did a moment ago, Mr. Emery, I wanted to ask you whether you knew the South before you and Miss Bankhead were married.
Well, I'm afraid you really haven't had much chance since we were married. Because you've been so busy, you really haven't had time to go back for a visit.
Yeah, but I hope we will one of these days. Regretfully, we only spent one day in Alabama after our marriage. And that was at the Speaker in Mrs. Bankhead's home in Jasper.
Oh.
That's a memory I shall never forget. When we arrived, we were greeted by many of the old family friends and neighbors from the surrounding countryside.
Oh, nice.
We hadn't told anyone of our plan except the Speaker, but nonetheless, the news leaked out.
Well, it was entirely too good to keep. I can well appreciate that.
Shortly after we were married, the Speaker took us out on the lawn and speeches were made.
I wish you'd stop calling Daddy the Speaker, darling. You'll hurt his feelings. Right. Well, he did ask you to call him Daddy, too.
Yes, of course. Well, it was all very delightful and heartwarming. The Speaker, Mr. Bankhead, Daddy, made a speech. And Mrs. Bankhead made a speech. Tallulah made a speech. I said, hello.
He's boasting, Mrs. Shallot. He was much too nervous on that occasion to even say hello.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. I'll bow very low as I kiss your hand.
You see, he's a Southerner already.
Oh, and very charming, too. By the way, Miss Bankhead, how is your distinguished father?
Oh, Dad is very well, thank you, Mrs. Shallot. And he really is adorable, but he has very severe eyebrows, which frighten most people, including John. But they've never frightened me. I know he's the kindest man in the world. Oh, but I must tell you, I'm going to have the upper hand over him in the course of a few days, confidentially. Daddy has always had a secret ambition to be an actor, and he's going to have his chance to realize this, and he recites a poem on a radio broadcast in the near future. And I've been asked to introduce him. Naturally, I'm frightfully flattered, and I've assured him of my complete moral support. He was very sweet about it and said that he certainly would be meeting you.
Oh, well, I will be looking forward indeed to listening in. Will your father be coming out for the opening of the play, by the way?
No, I'm afraid not. He expects to catch us, of course, in New York. And, of course, he's delighted that we have a new play, but he was very disappointed that we didn't go south to spend the summer with the family.
Oh, I can imagine.
Just as the New York play season closed, he wired me saying, now, come on home, baby, and feed up. Well, I have hard enough times as it is keeping my girlish figure. I don't know what would happen if I could go down there and live on fried chicken and cornbread and hot biscuits and all those wonderful dishes for the entire summer. But Daddy always thinks I'm skinny. Badly, he discounts my weakness in not being able to resist Southern food. You probably know, Mrs. Shallot, but in the South, they always say, now take two biscuits, honey, and butter them while they're hot.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. Well, at least that beautiful food is something to contemplate.
Oh, but only from a distance.
Mr. Emery, I'd like to ask you something about your very distinguished family. All of your father's family are in England, I believe.
That's correct, Mrs. Shallot. However, I've spent all my life here. I'm the first American of his family.
Well, I'm glad you remember to say that, John. Because I could always remember John's mother saying that there was only one thing that she was really proud of, and that was to be an American.
Oh, no.
Of being an American. Oh, I wish John could tell you some anecdotes about his family, Mrs. Shallot. They really are fascinating. You know, the family goes back many, many generations in the theater. His grandfather was a very close friend of Charles Dickens and was the first actor manager to produce the Dickens novels in drama form.
Interesting.
And then his great-grandfather, John, of whom he was named, was one of the most popular comedians of his day.
Mm.
John, do tell Mrs. Shallop the story of the grave digger sequence in Hamlet when the audience called him to sing.
Oh, by all means, let's hear that one.
Well, the story goes that my great-grandfather was a writer of popular ditties besides being a comedian. Apparently, he was one of the grave diggers in that scene in Hamlet where a tomb was being prepared. The story has it that the moment my great-grandfather was discovered throwing shovels of earth upon the stage, the audience broke into applause and insisted that he sing. Obviously, their demands were met because we're told that he burst into song with one of his numbers entitled, Here, York, You're Wanted. But having satisfied the audience, he proceeded with his grave digging.
Oh, he's a gentleman of great versatility, to say the least.
No, but John's great-grandfather was even more versatile, Mrs. Shallop.
Really?
Well, in his day as a theater, there were no actresses. Consequently, the actors always played women's parts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John's great-great-grandfather always played women's parts. One night he played Juliet of an evening,
uh-huh.
and would also take part in the orchestra by playing the violin in between the scenes. And as if that wasn't sufficient, he was a very fine painter on the side. As a matter of fact, he was a member of the Royal Academy.
Which, I might add, Mrs. Shallop, proved of great practical value to my great-great-grandfather. Because whenever the company lacked proper funds for paying their food and lodging in some small village, which was a regular event, great-great-grandfather stopped and painted a canvas to dismiss the debt.
Well, I'd say that the innkeeper certainly got the better of such bargains.
Definitely. I wish we could paint, John.
Yes, well, I'll dash off the portrait.
Miss Bankhead, this is a change of thought, but how do you feel about making pictures in the future? I know that from time to time, overtures are made you.
Well, at this particular time, when I'm concentrating so much and all my attention on the play, I really don't feel I should divert my attention.
Mm-hmm.
However, of course, I should like to make a picture sometime, providing all conditions, particularly pertaining to the story, were right.
Mm.
I feel most emphatically, though, that pictures help me tremendously on the stage.
Well, in what way?
Well, they taught me how to relax. That may sound strange to you, because relaxation is one of the fundamental principles of acting. But what I mean specifically is this. On the stage, you have to project more. You have to give out so much more of your voice and emotions to make yourself heard and felt. Consequently, when you come to pictures, you're very apt to overdo.
Mm-hmm.
The camera, I think, demands restraint. When I returned to the theater from pictures, I was very grateful for the training that pictures have given me on this point anyway, of learning how to relax. It was an enormous help. It taught me how to spare myself and at the same time how to give out more. Don't you, haven't you found that
illuminating?
Yes, I have. Of course, I've only made the one picture, Mr. Shallop, The Road Back.
Oh.
While that isn't sufficient to judge the advantages of films over the theater and vice versa still, I found the experience a very pleasant and interesting one. For one thing, so much is constantly being done for you to make you happy. At least I found it so.
Tell me, would you like to remain in Hollywood permanently?
You mean give up the stage and
I
fire?
I do,
me?
I do.
No,
never. Although I realize that other actors have said the same thing and then changed their minds later. The ideal arrangement for the stage actor would be to combine pictures with theater. That isn't as easy to accomplish as it sounds.
No.
But I suppose when you get right down to cases with me, Mrs. Shallop, I'll have to admit I still think there's a strange and wonderful thrill about acting in the theater. Even when the boards are creaky and the footlights don't work and the dressing rooms are dreary, damp, ill-ventilated holes in the wall.
Oh, you're making me feel like an open night, John. Stop it. Well, having heard that confession, Mrs. Shallop, you probably now know why I believe that if an actress is going to spend her life in the theater, she'd better marry an actor and get it over with. Someone who understands the theater life and is willing to put up with all its inconveniences and who isn't disillusioned by its unglamorous side. I have a marvelous secretary, companion, advisor, friend. And bully named Edie. She's been with me for 15 years.
Wonderful.
And she said to me when I was married, Donna, that's what she calls me, means thunder lady in several different languages. Donna, when a man marries an actress, he isn't taking on just a wife, he's marrying a tradition.
Well, I'd say those were words wisely spoken. Incidentally, Mr. Emery, there's a fine inferential compliment there for you.
Well, may I live up to it?
You're doing
Donna.
Very well, Donna.
Thanks.
Well, Miss Bankhead and Mr. Emery, I hate to say goodnight, but I want to thank you so much for the pleasure you've brought us. Wish you all the success in the world for your play and personal happiness.
Thank you very much.
Charlotte, we'd love you.
And good night, friends. I'll be with you again next week.
Elsa Shallott has been presented from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.